forth fatigue without parallel.
He cursed his eyes and said,
"May it please our Lord to free me from them."
Columbus was a deeply religious man. He was ill. Most historians.
Per lei da quando sai, la prima volta l'ho incontrata, non mi ricordo come, ma è entrata dentro e c'è restata. Vivo per lei perché mi fa vibrare forte l'anima, vivo per lei e non è un peso.
Vivo per lei, anch'io lo sai, e tu non esserne geloso. Lei è di tutti quelli che hanno un bisogno sempre acceso, come uno stereo in camera di chi è da solo e adesso sa che anche per lui, per questo io vivo per lei.
Che ci invita
a sfiorarla con le dita
attraverso un pianoforte. La morte lontana, io vivo per lei.
Vivo per lei che spesso sa che non fa mai male.
Vivo per lei, lo so, mi fa girare di città in città, soffrire un po', ma almeno io vivo.
Thank you. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and again, it's Monday night evening at 6 o'clock, roughly. We're a little late getting the program off the air tonight because one of my little iPod touches that I use for the show was out of battery, so I had to wait for it to charge up a bit. So, sorry about that. Program is entitled Health and the Awakening of the Self. So we try to give out practical information that you can use to enhance your health and restore your health if you have lost it. And also we give out a system of self-inquiry where you can, that'll help you to realize your real self as distinct from what Buddha called the false self, or the non-existing self, the self that is the personality, the person, the ego, and the persona. The persona is a mask, so this mask is not real. It just covers up what is real, and that is your real self, your more expanded self. That is the self whereby once you realize it, you're living in the perfume of pure freedom, joy, happiness, bliss, creativity, peace, compassion, and all the other positive qualities that life has to offer. So that is the reason why it's worth making an effort to realize your real self, because by doing that, you can evolve out of the mental and the suffering self. You can transcend suffering and live in these qualities that I just mentioned. My name is Dr. Mike. I'm a medical doctor and a naturopath for many years, and I'm also a teacher of meditation. So now that you know the goal of this program, I'm going to give you the email. You can call in here at any time during the program and interrupt whatever's going on. The number is 831-427-3772. And the email is freakradio.org. Once again, the telephone number is 831-427-3772. So if you have a spiritual master and you'd like to have him on this program, please give me a call and we'll see about arranging that. The slogan again of this program is that the mind should fall into the heart. The mind should be absorbed in the heart, in the state of beingness, the state of presence, the state of isness. And so the first program tonight is the first program tonight will be Well, you remember the last program I was talking about blood pressure. That's the theme of the program right now until we get some more knowledge about blood pressure out. So here we will have we'll have 12 ways to lower blood pressure naturally.
Touch Vario IQ meter. The top lights up.
For high blood pressure, put your feet in warm water for 5 to 10 minutes.
We got the wrong program there. Hang on a second. There was a crossover there. That is not the one I wanted, actually. Yeah, I'm just getting it queued up now.
12 ways to lower blood pressure without drugs. 1. Stop smoking. Tobacco hardens your arteries and the walls of your blood vessels. If you can't quit cold turkey, ask your doctor for help in developing a plan. Plus, let's face it, smoking is so last century. Two, time to get some exercise. Normally an average of at least 30 minutes a day. Now, you don't have to join a health club and start grunting in the weight room. Even moderate walking is great. Ask your doctor to help you develop a plan that's right for your needs. Exercise is a habit, just like any other. Once you get in the swing, you'll get addicted to feeling great. Three, watch the salt, or sodium. You've probably heard this advice before, and it's true, but not for everyone. Around 58% of people with high blood pressure are salt sensitive. If you are salt sensitive, it's best to keep sodium intake to no more than 2400 milligrams a day, or ideally under 1500 a day. Processed and fast foods are packed with sodium. If you keep a salt log for a single day, you'll be amazed at just how much is in our diets. You can easily exceed the entire day's recommended amount in a single fast food meal. 4. Get your potassium. Most people eat a sodium to potassium ratio of 2 to 1. We eat twice as much sodium as we do potassium. The ideal ratio for blood pressure control is 1 to 5. We should be eating 5 times more potassium than sodium. Excellent dietary sources of potassium are apricots, avocado, bananas, cantaloupe, honeydew, kiwis, lima beans, milk, oranges and OJ, potatoes, prunes, spinach, tomatoes, and squash. Another way to reduce sodium and get more potassium is by switching your table salt to potassium salt products like No Salt and New Salt. Both are available at most supermarkets. 5. No more heavy metal. Now, we're not talking about the music here. We're talking about lead, cadmium, and mercury, all of which are linked to hypertension. For example, if you live in an old house with lead pipes, you might have lead poisoning, which can impair the liver and cause high blood pressure. Smoker, cigarette smoke contains cadmium. Dental fillings, many, but not all, contain mercury. You can find out if you have unhealthy levels of heavy metals in your body through a simple test called hair mineral analysis. 6. Time to get your weight on target. Do you know what your ideal weight is? Most people don't. Simple solution? Ask your doctor. Added pounds make your heart work overtime. In nearly all cases, high blood pressure is reduced or eliminated along with unwanted weight. Losing weight isn't one size fits all, no pun intended. Everyone is different. Ask your doctor to help you develop a custom plan that's right for you. 7. Avoid refined carbohydrates, or sugar. Sugar is a key factor in atherosclerosis, a condition in which fatty material collects along the walls of the arteries. Sugar causes spikes of the hormone insulin. Elevated insulin, in turn, is associated with increased triglycerides, cholesterol, higher risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and high blood pressure. 8. Time to watch that alcohol. No more than one drink per day for women and two for men. Watching alcohol is also clinically proven to prevent cocktail party gaffes. 9. Avoid caffeine. In some, but not all people, caffeine triggers blood pressure spikes. 10. Eat fresh, eat healthy. Check out the DASH diet, DASH stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension, for an overview of the fruits, veggies, whole grains, and low-fat, high-protein, smart options. You can get a free copy at lowerbloodpressuredrugfree.com. People who followed this diet in a clinical study had average blood pressure reductions of 11.4 systolic and 5.5 diastolic. You know the all-too-true old cliché, you are what you eat. Get enough sleep. Emerging research suggests that sleep deprivation and high blood pressure are linked. What's more important, that last hour of late-night TV or waking refreshed and feeling great? 12. Manage your stress. We live in a time when people are exposed to more stress than, frankly, our bodies were designed to handle. Just like you wouldn't skip a shower, brushing your teeth, or not eat for a whole day, you need to take time every day for deep relaxation. TV time and surfing the net don't count. Those are the potato chips of the relaxation world. Guided breathing, through techniques such as the Breathtaking Nature Method, is one of the easiest, fastest, and most powerful ways to get your daily dose of deep relaxation. To learn more about natural ways to control your blood pressure without drugs, visit us at lowerbloodpressuredrugfree.com.
Okay, that was a doctor, but I don't have his name, actually. You know, you are allowed about a teaspoonful of salt a day, which is, in my way of eating, it's quite a lot of salt. And I think that the body needs salt. It needs minerals. Most people are deficient in minerals today. The body needs 60 minerals to function properly. That's all parts of the body need 60 minerals. And if you take Himalayan salt, there's something like 70-something minerals. I mean, there's a huge amount of minerals there. So that's the kind of salt that I eat myself, Himalayan salt. I mean, I don't overdo it, but I try to take a little every day. And he talked about blood pressure, and you remember we had a program last week on blood pressure, and Dr. Wright from Tacoma in Washington was talking to us about blood pressure and about how if you're deficient in vitamin D, it will be a cause for your blood pressure. He also talked about heavy metals, and so did this doctor talk about heavy metals. So we'll address that issue maybe tomorrow night on the show tomorrow from 8 to 9. And also diabetes, of course, is another cause for blood pressure metastatic syndrome, insulin resistance. So we've done many programs on that, and we've put forward the latest way to treat diabetes, to cure it, in fact. And we'll come back to that again. But right now we're basically focusing on blood pressure. And so we may have more of that blood pressure problem later tonight, because we have 2 hours, basically. And it was quite a rush to get the program off the ground on time tonight, because some of my instruments had run out of gas, out of battery power, and I had to wait for them to kind of to warm up to a certain level before they start functioning. Now we're going to go over to the spiritual part of the program now, and we're going to talk about why we have fear of death, why and how we can approach that. So afraid of change, so afraid of the termination of our life. Again, we can analyze that through the words we write and the things we say. Again, it boils down to the identification
of who we are with temporary structures in life. The nature of consciousness itself is kind of sticky. It sticks to things, and that's called identification. And it's a bit like the old story you may have heard of the chicken, of the eagle. The chickens found the eagle egg on the ground, and the eagle hatched out of the egg, and the chickens raised this eagle to raise it up into its adult life. But the eagle imbibed all the behaviors of the chicken over the years, and it followed the chickens around just in the same way as a regular chicken would. But one day this eagle was flying in the sky and spotted the eagle behaving like a chicken on the ground, and flew down, and the eagle, who thought he was a chicken because he was so identified with the other chickens and his environment, that he presumed he was a chicken and behaved in like manner. And of course this kind of story has even happened to human beings who were raised by wolves and other animals, true story in history. But getting back to the story, when the real eagle landed, he could see that he had the characteristics and the anatomy of the eagle, so he gradually was able to withdraw his identification from being a chicken to being an actual eagle. And he took off into the air eventually with the eagle, and rightfully claimed his true identification. Well, we're similar to that story, because pure consciousness itself is very sticky, and it sticks to things. So when we grow up, we take our identification from what country we were born in. We take our identification from what religion we grew up in, what family we grew up in. And so we take all these different identifications, and this is not really our true nature. Our true nature is somewhat different, is totally different. Our true nature is basically the pure consciousness that we really are, disassociated from all these different identifications. If we have a strong identification about what country we come from, that leads to nationalism, and that leads to very often that can lead to one country fighting at war with another. So it's all these false identifications that we have to transcend, we have to loosen, transcend, until we eventually arrive at our true divine nature, and that is consciousness itself. You know, we say, I am aware of the body, I am aware of my house, I am aware of my nationality, I am aware if I'm a man or if I'm a woman. So we have all these awarenesses of who we think we are. And we think we're a man, we think we're a woman, we think we're of this ethnic race. So we have all these identifications. But if we analyze the statement, I am aware I am Irish, I am aware I'm American, if we can withdraw our stickiness or our identification with these things, we can just be in the awareness. I am aware I am Irish, I am aware I am American, I am aware I'm a man, I'm aware I'm a woman. But if we can stop the statement at the word awareness, So we don't project it onto, we don't project this awareness onto all these false identifications. If we can be the awareness itself, then we're getting back to our true nature of freedom, of harmony, of love, of joy, of bliss, of compassion, and all the other good qualities of consciousness, or the good qualities of spirit that's talked about in most religions around the world. Then we're coming back into our true nature, which is not physical, it's a spiritual or consciousness. Getting back to what we said earlier about why we're so afraid of death, why we're so afraid of change, is that we identify with these temporary structures. There's eternal things and there's these temporary things in time and space. So when we identify with the body, which is in time and space, it starts at the conception of the egg and the sperm, and it ends at the graveside. So we're aware that these things are, that the body is temporary, but consciousness itself, when we actually experience it inside, when we go into the subtle regions of our beingness, we can see, we can perceive directly. You don't need any book or anyone to tell you. You can perceive directly that consciousness is outside time. It has no beginning in time. It has no end in time. So from that experience, you can get the clear perception that you, in your essence, in your consciousness, are eternal. So, but because we're so identified with these temporary structures, meaning the body and the mind and the environment, that we know that these things are going to change and die, and that makes us, because of this stickiness, this identification, that makes us unsettling. Because we think we are these temporary structures, and we will come to an end when these structures come to an end themselves, when the body comes to an end, when the mind ceases. So that's why we have this fear of death, because we have this strong identification, and we think when the body dies, we are going to come to an end. Whereas, if you had some more objectivity in your awareness, and if you recognize your true nature being eternal, and you recognize you're not the body and you're not the mind, it has to come from a direct recognition. Then you don't have this anxiety about death and change. You don't have this anxiety, even though you know the body's going to die, because you perceive that you are just going to observe the one day, you're just going to observe the body fade away, but you, in your full conscious state, are going to continue, because you are outside time and space itself.
Okay, now I think it's time for some music. So we have Christina Aguilera and Andre Bocelli singing Paola Mandujano.
éramos novios, pues los dos sentimos mutuo amor profundo. Y con eso ya ganamos lo más grande de este mundo. Nos amamos, nos besamos, como novios nos deseamos, y hasta a veces, sin motivo, sin razón, nos enojamos.
Somos novios, mantenemos un cariño limpio y puro. Como todos, procuramos el momento más oscuro. Recordarle qué color son los cerezos, sin hacer más comentarios, somos novios, sin motivo, sin razón, mantenemos un cariño.
Como todos, procuramos el momento más oscuro para darnos el más dulce de los besos, recordar de qué color son los sin hacer más comentarios, somos novios.
Somos novios.
Siempre novios. Somos novios.
That was Christine Aguilera and Aguilera and Andrew Bocelli singing Paola Nandu Hano. A very beautiful song. And now we're going to go to Dr. Joel Wallace. He's the doctor who put that tape out and that book out, Dead Doctors Don't Lie. So he discovered, he's very well educated, and he discovered he discovered the cause for cystic fibrosis and muscular dystrophy. And he's going to talk about that now. It's a very short piece.
1978. I actually discovered the cause, prevention, and cure for cystic fibrosis. And at first, every expert in the field of cystic fibrosis, which is a childhood disease thought to be, incorrectly, but thought to be a genetically transmitted disease, it turns out that it's a congenital deficiency of the trace mineral selenium. And I proved this, got experts to agree on my cases of cystic fibrosis in primates. I was working at the Yerkes Regional Primate Research Center in Atlanta, Georgia, for Emory University and NASA at the time. And I'd been in the orthodox medical field for many, many years. And the book that I had written on some of my projects, one of these big 1,200-page reference books, is in the Smithsonian Institute as a national treasure, right? And they fired me because they said, well, you've got to be sniffing glue, because everybody knows this is a genetically transmitted disease, and you're going off on a tangent. So they fired me. They didn't leave it go at that. I went and I actually got another job at St. Louis University as the director of their laboratory animal facilities, and NIH chased me and said, we'll defund you guys if you hire him. So they fired me again. I wasn't even unpacked, right? So I knew this was going to be a disaster. And so what turned this around nicely was 2 years ago, the National Science Foundation in their official journal came out and said one of the most useful findings, unexpected findings from basic research, where it was just serendipitous finding, was the discovery of cystic fibrosis in a monkey by a young pathologist. Well, they said with a little bracket that Emory University refused to release the name of the young pathologist, me, because they'd fired me, right? So we're in the process of getting the record corrected and so forth. And we've taken this now to muscular dystrophy. We now know the cause, prevention, and cure of muscular dystrophy. We've known it for 60 years in the livestock industry, and of course, the medical system, they dismiss that, well, that's an animal, is it? Not true in people. Well, I spent 2 weeks in a county in which a significant number of kids are born with muscular dystrophy, and we're able to reverse it quite simply with supplementation, and certainly preventable because Purdue University has already done the groundwork in the animals in the area, and because these minerals are missing in the soil, they couldn't raise livestock. So Purdue University found out 50 years ago, if you add these minerals to their feed, no muscular dystrophy. But the people living on the land there got muscular dystrophy because they didn't supplement. It's just beautiful.
Very cool.
Okay, and incidentally, the film star who, the comedian who was looking after the muscular dystrophy drive for money every year, Dr. Wallace sent him on the particulars to do with the cause and the cure. I don't know if it's a cure or not, but certainly the cause and how to treat it. The information was sent on to Jerry, I forgot his last name now, you know who I'm talking about. He runs that drive every year, and once he relayed the information on to those people, they fired him too. So there you are. That's the corruption of the medical field, and the corruption of money. So sometimes people really don't want a cure for a disease. It's just the politics of medicine, I'm sorry to say. Now we're still on the subject of high blood pressure. Now we got Dr. Mercola, who's going to speak to us, tell us a few things about high blood pressure.
It's common, in fact, that one out of three of you watching this has it, and that clinical condition is called hypertension. Now that sounds like you might be tense. Before I started med school, that's what I was confused, and I believe many people have that confusion. But hypertension is actually, of course, high blood pressure. And although tension or anxiety can contribute to high blood pressure, certainly, it is for the most part not the primary reason why people have high blood pressure. So let me give you some of the definitions first. Typically, you're diagnosed as having high blood pressure if your blood pressure reading is above 120 over 80. And the first number is what's called the systolic. And then that typically should be below 120. And the bottom number is called the diastolic, and that typically should be below 80. So if you're below those ranges, is not much of a concern. However, if you have been diagnosed with high blood pressure, it's important to understand that one of the most common risk factors for high blood pressure is weight. So if you're obese, that is going to increase your risk. But interestingly, the way we diagnose hypertension is through by taking your blood pressure, and that's typically done by putting a cuff around your arm. So it's important to understand that there's different cuffs, that if you are large, or especially very large, you're going to require a larger cuff. So when you get the blood pressure taken with a cuff, it's very important you look at the blood pressure cuff and make sure, they typically have marks to make sure that when you wrap the cuff around that it's within that normal range. If it's not, then you need to find the right size cuff. Now this actually goes the other way too, so that if you are a small, very tiny or a small child, and you need to use a pediatric cuff. So that's an important consideration. Now, it's also important to understand that there are typically medications are used to control this. And in the traditional approach, that is the major strategy. And hypertension is really almost a dream come true for drug companies, just similar to cholesterol in that it is a drug that typically doesn't have signs or symptoms, but that is that they have developed a number of treatments for that don't change or modify or it at all address the cause of the disease. And in fact, I to this day, I remember reading my medical physiology textbook that when we were studying hypertension, and it was called Guyton, the Guyton textbook of physiology, and it listed that the 95% of the cause of hypertension is what they call idiopathic, means they don't know. But that's just not true. We know what the cause of hypertension is. For the most part, it's related to your body making too much insulin, very similar to cholesterol. So when your body makes too much insulin, it causes your blood pressure to increase. So there are fortunately very simple ways to lower your insulin levels. And you know, folks, you can measure this. All you have to do is have your blood tested by your doctor, a fasting insulin level, and your insulin level you want to strive for is about 2 or 3. If it's 5 or certainly over 10, you have got a problem and you need to lower that. And of course, you don't lower with drugs, you lower it with natural approaches. And one of the most effective ways to do that is with exercise, a regular effective exercise program, which consists of certainly aerobics, anaerobics like sprint, burst types of exercising, strength training. And ideally, you'd like to have someone monitor and supervise your program, because it's really vital that you get this right. But a good comprehensive holistic exercise program will go a long way towards reducing that. And ideally, you want to need to get to about an hour a day, somewhere in that range, but you want to work slowly and start slowly. So that is one of the most important. The other is to cut out foods that's going to raise your insulin. And typically foods that would do that are sugar types of foods or grains, because they break down to sugars very rapidly. Even whole grains, organic whole grains, will do that. So if you have high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol, or obesity, you want to lower those. So that would be breads, pastas, rice, cereal, potatoes. Even if they're organic, it's still going to do the same thing. Until you get those under control, you want to stay away from those. And fruits are also fall in those categories, because those are high in carbohydrates. So the other thing you can do is make sure that you're reducing the stress, because that is a factor for some people. And prayer or meditation or EFT, emotional freedom technique, is another useful thing. Now, another interesting new insight that is very clearly powerful and effective is to normalize your vitamin D levels. And I've got lots of information on vitamin D, and you've probably seen or read some of that, but if you haven't, then clearly examine that, because vitamin D is unquestionably associated with a lower vitamin D levels associated with an increased risk for heart disease. And vitamin D, we know now, actually lowers and normalizes your blood pressure, so that's a good strategy. The other thing you want to do is to make sure that you're having your omega-6 to omega-3 fat ratio is correct. And most people have that ratio is about 25 to 1, because we've radically increased the amount of omega-6 fat. So you want to make sure you lower the amount of vegetable oils in your diet and make sure you have a high-quality source of omega-3 fatty acids. That's going to be really crucial. Now, I also want to give you a warning. Now, you know I'm opposed to taking medications and drugs. And clearly, the long-term strategy is to get off of all your medications. But if you're on a medication, you certainly want to do that with a supervised healthcare professional. And if you have very high blood pressure, I hardly ever recommend the use of medications. But it is vital that you go on a medication to lower your blood pressure if it's very high, because stroke is real. People die from strokes every day. And if your blood pressure is too high, you are at risk for developing a stroke. And I don't know if you've ever seen anyone with a stroke, but it is not pretty to lose your brain cells. It tends to be permanent and irreversible, so you want to make sure that you're not increasing your risk for that. So make sure you're using a safe medication by a physician who's going to monitor you with those until you're able to implement these lifestyle changes that will allow you to slowly wean off the medications and get the cause of the problem addressed. So hopefully this will provide you with some practical insights and some strategies that you or your family members can use to take care of this very common condition.
into the one who is unhappy.
Into the one who is unhappy. The woman who questioned over there, the last thing you said to her was, if you're unhappy, to inquire into that.
Into the one who is unhappy.
Into the one who is unhappy. What, I mean, I hear the word inquiry a lot, and sometimes you use the word just to go deeply into something. I don't really...
suggestion here is that the
sorry, we had a hum in this in the electrical thing here, so I'm just going to start that talk again.
Would not be to get busy changing the relationship, but would be rather
the woman who questioned over there, the last thing you said to her was if you're unhappy, to inquire into that.
Into the one who is unhappy.
Into the one who is unhappy. What, I mean, I hear the word inquiry a lot, and sometimes you use the word just to go deeply into something. I don't really understand that process, and
okay.
If it's, you know, a specific thing, is there different ways of doing it, or whatever?
So, let's say you're unhappy, and on the face of it, your unhappiness is caused by a particular relationship. So, the suggestion here is, I'm not implying that one shouldn't attend to a relationship, of course, but the suggestion here is that the primary response to that feeling of happiness, would not be to get busy changing the relationship, but would be rather to ask, turn around in the other direction, away from the apparently objective cause, the problem in the relationship, towards yourself, the I that says, I am unhappy. And then you ask yourself, okay, what is this I? Because the unhappiness that I feel has not just been caused by this relationship. I've also felt exactly the same unhappiness at other times in my life for completely different reasons. In fact, whenever I've felt unhappy, it's always the same feeling. But it seems to have numerous different causes. Well, obviously, if it's caused by lots of different things, no single thing can be the cause of that unhappiness. So that should be enough to make us question the one that is unhappy. Because that is the one that is always the same in each of these experiences, the outward cause changes all the time, but the I that is unhappy is always the same I. So you ask yourself, okay, well, what am I? Who is this I that is unhappy? And then you start to look for what it is in yourself that is referred to by the word I. So do that now. You use the word I many times a day, both in your thoughts and in your speech. So what do you refer to when you say I? unhappy, yes, but can you be more specific if you were to describe the person?
Well, this person that I identify as myself.
Okay, so that would be a body?
Yes.
A collection of thoughts and memories and feelings. This.
Yes.
Okay. So then you start there. So I is this mixture of thoughts and images, feelings and sensations and perceptions. And then you notice, hang on a minute, my thoughts are always coming and going. But I'm not always coming and going. I'm aware of my thoughts. Oh, that's funny. I thought I was my thoughts, but actually, and then you check it out. You watch how thoughts arise and go by. You watch them go by, and you think, oh, that's, of course, I'm not made, what I essentially am is not made out of a thought. So then you take it a bit deeper. You think about your feelings. Feeling of being lonely, of being a failure, of being insecure, of not being loved, or whatever, guilt, or whatever. You think, that's funny. None of these feelings remain with me all the time. They're all just passing by. They feel a little bit deeper than thoughts, but nevertheless, they still all pass by. I don't always feel lonely. I just sometimes feel lonely. That feeling, it appears. I'm aware of it, and then it disappears, but I remain. I remain behind a little bit. When the feeling of, let's say, the feeling of loneliness one evening disappears, you don't have the experience, oh, a little bit of me has disappeared with it. Yeah, you just remain. So then you notice, that's interesting. I'm what I essentially am is not my feelings either. And then what about your sensations? Rub your hands together. You're aware of that sensation. You stop. The sensation goes. Your sensations, which is the larger part of your experience of the body, also they come and go. You are aware of them. Your images, you are aware of them. They come and go. The sights you have, the sounds you have, the tastes you have, all these come and go, but you don't come and go with them. So then a very interesting thing happens. You realize, oh, I thought that what I essentially was a person, a mixture of thoughts, feelings, sensations, and perceptions, a kind of bundle that was all packaged in this, sort of inside this body. But actually, when I look a little bit more closely, all of these are things that come and go. But I am something different from I'm aware of them all. Are you with me so far? Yeah. So then you begin to reevaluate what you refer to when you say I. You think, oh, actually, the I that I have been referring to myself as throughout my life, when you were a 5-year-old girl, you called yourself I, and 10-year-old, and 20-year-old, it's always been I. But your thoughts haven't always been with you, your feelings haven't always been with you, your sensations and perceptions haven't always been with you, but you have always been present. You have always been I. The only thing that has never left you, that has never been parted from you, or that you have never ceased to be, is simply this awareness or consciousness that is aware of the person, mind, feeling, thoughts, feelings, sensations, and also aware of the world. So then when you look back on your unhappiness, what is the experience of unhappiness? It's a collection of feelings and thoughts. I'm aware of those feelings and thoughts. They're not always there. They don't go into the make of me. they pass through me, pass by me. In other words, it's not I that is unhappy. I is this perfectly peaceful background of awareness through which these flow of thoughts and feelings and sensations and perceptions pass. So then we begin to get interested. Wow. I didn't realize I was that. All my life, I've just mistaken myself for a cluster of passing thoughts and feelings. And I've lived my life as if I was that. I've related to other people as if I was that. But now that I look, I'm not that. I experience that. It appears to me. But I am something that is, as it were, in the background of all of that. So then we really become interested. Well, what is that? I hadn't noticed before. What is this aware presence that I always am? That knows my experience, but that is not itself made out of an experience, that is not itself made out of a thought, a feeling, a sensation, or a perception. So we begin to give this aware being that we have now discovered ourselves to be, we give it our attention. We begin to be less interested in the thoughts and the feelings, and we become more interested in the one that is aware of them. You might ask, well, who is aware of that? It is aware of itself, because it is the one that is aware of your experience. In other words, it is this I that is aware of itself. It is, as it were, looking at itself, as opposed to looking at all the thoughts and feelings that it previously mistook itself to be. If you do that, and then you remember your unhappiness again, and you turn around and you look at, where is that unhappiness now? Where is it gone? Try it.
You can't find it.
So if you can't find it, having undertaken this investigation, what would the cause of the unhappiness really have been?
Well, I can't even imagine.
The cause would have been to mistake yourself for the cluster of thoughts and feelings.
Oh.
Because as long as you are mistaking yourself for a cluster of thoughts and feelings and sensations, you were having unhappy relationships. Previously, you always, this is just, it's just an example. Previously, we thought, oh, it's all the relationships and the objects and the jobs and the homes and the everything else that caused my unhappiness. But now, when I explore my experience, I find that if I go really to myself and discover what I am, and then I turn around again and look for the unhappiness, as you rightly said, you can't find it anymore. Therefore, the cause of the unhappiness was not the relationships, the situations, the activities. It was the mistaking ourself to be this cluster of thoughts and feelings. And this gives us a taste of this discovery of the cause of unhappiness, gives us the hint as to where true happiness lies. Because once you discover that you can no longer find your unhappiness. What is that experience called when you can't find any unhappiness? What's the simple name for it?
I don't know.
Happiness. It's called happiness. Yeah. When you can't find any unhappiness, it's called happiness. Yeah. And you make this discovery that it was because you came very close to yourself. You ceased mistaking yourself for a cluster of thoughts, feelings, sensations, and perceptions, that your unhappiness left you and you found yourself just peaceful. So then you have discovered the most precious thing in life, where happiness resides. And you can go back there whenever you want. To begin with, we just visit it from time to time when we're unhappy. But the more we get to know it, the more we fall in love with it, and eventually we move in.
Well, you...
Okay, I thought that was quite a good explanation, and basically we don't have to look anywhere for peace. We are peace itself, and we don't have to look anywhere for joy because we are joy and happiness itself. That's our basic reality. So what we have to do is loosen the attachments, the false identification with the feelings and thoughts and sensations and perceptions, and fall back into our awareness of our essential nature. And once we do that, we have happiness, as he talked there. And we have all the other good qualities that life has to offer. So that's the purpose of this self-inquiry, is to move out of the claustrophobic self, the false self that's made up of our projections and our memories and our beliefs and all the other mental baggage that goes into that, and to... That's a play on the superficial level of life. It does offer a certain amount of fun and attachments, but it can easily swing over to the other superficial level of life, which is pain and depression and all the other negativities. So what we have to do is we have to transcend these two levels of life to a deeper, a more fulfilling level, where even in the ocean, if waves come crashing by on the surface of the ocean, they're not going to affect our stability and our peace and our happiness. This is where true fulfillment lies. We don't even call it happiness per se. We call it fulfillment and freedom. Okay, now we're going to continue on to some music. We have Andrea Bocelli singing Vivo Per Lei. Quite a nice song.
I have a dream.
As a soldier of
Vivo per lei da quando sai, la prima volta l'ho incontrata, non mi ricordo come ma è entrata dentro e c'è restata. Vivo per lei perché mi fa vibrare forte l'anima, vivo per lei e non è un peso.
Vivo per lei anch'io lo sai, e tu non esserne geloso. Lei è di tutti quelli che hanno un bisogno sempre acceso, come uno stereo in camera di chi è da solo e adesso sa che anche per lui, per questo io vivo per lei.
È una musa che ci invita verso un piano forte, la morte lontana, io vivo per lei.
Vivo per lei che spesso sa essere dolce e sensuale, a volte picchia in testa ma è un pugno che non fa mai male.
Vivo per lei, lo so, mi fa girare di città in città.
soffrire un po', ma almeno io vivo.
That was Andrew Bocelli and somebody called Laura. It doesn't actually say who's singing with him. Viva per lei, very nice song. Very nice music, very nice singers. Now we're going to... you heard about blood pressure, and you've also heard now from at least two sources that low vitamin D level is one of the causes for high blood pressure. So it's very important that you find out if you have enough vitamin D in your body. You can do this by a simple blood test. Just ask your doctor, and he should know about it, and get the test done. The normal dose is somewhere around 5,000 international units. Obviously, if you're not that deficient, as most people are, you need less. And if you're very deficient, you'll need more than 5,000. So that's why the blood test will tell you basically where you should be. So here's a doctor talking about how you can get find the proper optimal level for your body, okay? Hang on a second.
Or night. It's called. Talking with Dr. James Dowd, the author of The Vitamin D Cure. How did you first discover that you were deficient, and how did you get out of that hole, so to speak, and talk about your history with vitamin D?
Well, so my story is that I was raised in Texas, in Houston, Texas, so the southern part of Texas, and I was on the swim team, and I rode my bike a lot, and I was outside all the time, and most of my training was done in Texas. I did my undergraduate there, I did medical school there, I even did my fellowship there in rheumatology. I met someone during my fellowship, and when we moved back to her home state of Michigan, things were okay for 2 or 3 or 4 years. And then about 4 or 5 years into living in Michigan, I just didn't feel well. The quality of my sleep deteriorated. I started getting muscle cramps, and my hands would, the end joints of my fingers, and being a rheumatologist, I knew, okay, this is probably early osteoarthritis, but why is it happening to me at only 40 years of age? And I'd wake up in the morning, particularly at the end of winter and in the early spring, and I could hardly make a fist, and it hurt for patients to shake my hand. I said, something's not right here. And it was weird that it was coming the first few years. It was only in this certain time of year that I would have these symptoms, and then it started becoming more year-round symptoms. And what was odd was I was seeing this happening myself, and then I would go to the office and talk to patients, and they would tell me the exact same story that I was feeling myself. And I was thinking, okay, whatever's happening to me is happening to my patients too. And then I stumbled across a handful of patients. These were actually African Americans in the office, patients who came in with diseases that were vaguely possibly related to vitamin D deficiency. And I thought, well, you know, I'll check a vitamin D level, see what it is. And their levels, several of them were undetectable. And I thought, okay, this is bizarre. I was always told in training that, you know, all you need is casual sun exposure. And that casual sun exposure definition was, 10 or 15 minutes exposure of your hands and your face. That's plenty, okay? Well, clearly these people were getting that. Why did they have no vitamin D at all in their blood? And then I would go through the process of replacing their vitamin D, and all kinds of symptoms were getting. Their aches and pains went away. Their fatigue went away. They were sleeping better. And I thought, okay, something bizarre is going on here, and I need to know more about this. And so at that point, I became very interested in vitamin D, started measuring it much more often in my patients, and started vociferously reading all the science about vitamin D. And when I looked up after about a year or two, I had read I don't know how many hundreds of papers on vitamin D, and I was really in a completely different place about how I thought about people's illnesses, and what I could do for them. And that maybe even some of these patients you could cure by simply changing their lifestyle or supplementing targeted supplementation, you could eliminate the symptoms that they were coming in with. So it was really an eye-opener and a game-changer for me.
And talk about your progression then when you started to feel better and how now that's translated into your practice. I mean, your practice has changed a lot in how you treat patients with what some of the things that you had.
Yeah, so initially, it was all about vitamin D, and as I was reading about vitamin D, I also wanted to learn more about calcium because it was clear that vitamin D wasn't the only thing regulating calcium, that there were other factors involved. And that led to me reading a lot more about diet and acid-base balance in the diet and exercise and what role that played. And it really morphed into an entire lifestyle change. And as I was reading about these things, I was making the changes myself. I'm always the first guinea pig. And so I was making these changes, and I was feeling incredible. I mean, I thought to myself, okay, all the aches and pains have gone away. My hands don't hurt anymore. My sleep has gone back to the way it was. I can sleep like a baby. The exercise got rid of, you know, cramps in the neck. I was taking some magnesium citrate, and that got rid of a lot of muscle cramps I was having. So some of these complementary targeted supplements that complement one another that I talk about in the book really seemed to be working. I mean, I'd read the literature, then I would try it myself, and boom, I was feeling better. And I was like, wow, this is really cool how this works. And then I was starting to implement it in my practice as well, and seeing remarkable, not everybody was that remarkable, but clearly there were some patients. You come in, you make these very straightforward changes, and they come back in and they're just, thank you so much, this is unbelievable, I can't believe I feel so much better with such a simple solution. And other doctors were trying to give them medications, and they were on prescriptions for these symptoms, and they no longer needed these prescriptions. And so I was kind of experiencing this whole thing along with my patients, and it was really quite gratifying. And it was this momentum that developed from the reading and putting it into practice that led to the book.
Was it easy to translate that into your patients? When you talk about a lifestyle change, that's a lot more difficult than it is taking a medication once a day. Was that easy for you to change your lifestyle and your diet? And has that been for your patients as well? Have they been willing to make a big change like that?
Well, so lifestyle changes, this is, you know, if we could answer this question, this is the $10 million question, because compliance is always a struggle. Now, when I first was introducing myself to all of these new ideas, and the enthusiasm alone motivated me to make all these changes, and I stuck to them like glue. And many of my patients, I see the same thing. In the first few months, they see this as a revelation, and they're thinking, wow, this is a whole new way of thinking about this problem I have, or these symptoms I have, and maybe there is something I can do about them, and they're motivated to take that step. And so for the first few months, maybe even for the first year, they are gung-ho, and they stick to it tightly. And then you feel better, and after you start feeling better, you think, well, you know, maybe I can have a piece of pizza, or maybe I can add the bread back, and maybe I don't need to take the vitamin D in the summertime, because I get out in the sun enough. And so you start to make some of these compromises, and what I found is that immediately you feel an impact now. And so what the initial change does is it tunes you into how much better you feel doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you slip up, it also tunes you into how lousy you feel when you're off the diet, when you're off the lifestyle changes, when you stop the targeted supplementation. Mm-hmm. So people still struggle with it, and so I see a lot of patients, and my visits become basically pep rallies to get them back on program. Mm-hmm. But I feel better about myself as a physician being a motivator for what I know is a healthy lifestyle than just refilling prescriptions and asking if they're taking their medications. So I feel much better about reinforcing these lifestyle changes at every visit than I did before, when all it was medications.
And how much more important is it when your patients educate themselves to know that if I change my lifestyle and do this, it's safe? I mean, it's a more healthy way of living versus medication, which could have a lot of question marks in the short and long term.
Yeah, it's initially when I started with this message, many patients were very receptive. Okay, as soon as you say, well, we might be able to get you off medications, their eyes get a little open. Wider, and they say, "Really? I may not have to take this for the rest of my life, or I may not have to be on all of these things." And so, receptivity early on is quite high. That's not to say that there aren't patients out there who are looking for a simple, convenient solution in the form of a pill. Most patients are very receptive. And now that I've been in practice and the book has come out, I'm actually attracting the patients who want this. And so the practice has even changed a bit from 5 years ago before the book came out, because patients are now coming in and they come in with a bag full of targeted supplements, and they come from another rheumatologist and they say, look, this is the rheumatologist, here's what they have me on, I don't want to take these things anymore. Or I want to take as little as possible. Here's some things I've been experimenting with. What can you tell me about what I've been experimenting with, good or bad, or appropriate or inappropriate, because it's not good or bad, it's appropriate or inappropriate, and what other changes can I make? Empower me, in other words. They're asking me to empower them to so that I don't have to take these medications. So it's really been a joy to see my practice sort of change in character, so that now I'm actually attracting patients who are even more motivated than the patients I had before, because they've already decided in their mind, this is the direction I want to go.
che te pregunto che quando, come e donde, tu sempre me respondes quizás, quizás, quizás.
Y así pasan los días y yo desesperando y tú, tú contestando quizás, quizás, quizás.
Estás perdiendo el tiempo pensando, pensando por lo que más tú quieras. ¿Hasta cuándo? Cuando y así pasan
los días
desesperando y tú, tú contestando quizás, quizás, quizás. Que te pregunto,
siempre que me preguntas
cuándo, cómo y dónde,
cómo, mi amor,
tú siempre,
yo siempre
me respondes quizás, quizás,
quizás, quizás.
Estás perdiendo el tiempo pensando, pensando por lo que más tú quieras. ¿Hasta cuándo? ¿Hasta cuándo? Estás perdiendo el tiempo pensando, pensando por lo que más tú quieras. ¿Hasta cuándo? ¿Hasta cuándo? Y así pasan los días,
días,
y yo desesperando.
Contestando
quizás, quizás, quizás,
quizás, quizás, quizás,
quizás, quizás, quizás.
That was Andrea Bocelli and Jennifer Lopez singing Quizás, Quizás, Quizás. Nice music, good for the soul. And now we're going to play a short piece. Something's moved here on me. Now I have to kind of set it up again because somehow I tipped something that wasn't quite exactly where I was supposed to touch. And it's... All right, this is a short piece by Master Muji, and it's called Empty Yourself of Your Own Conditioning. You know, we're all being conditioned by the family we grew up in, the type of society we grew up in, our school, our culture, our religion, our government. Some of this conditioning is good, it's positive, and some of it is not at all positive, and we have to transcend it and wipe ourselves, be free of it.
Can you perceive things as they really are? Is it possible to perceive life as it really is? How is it possible? Unless you empty yourself of your own conditioning. And how can you do this? When so many filters are in operation, how you perceive what you like and dislike, it's already shaped. You see? So how can you get out of this? only if you're aware that this is the function, the play of conditioning that arose in this body, and that something is maybe responsible for it, I don't know, but it's going on by itself, and you're capable of observing that, which places you where, you see. Even now, this is true for every single one here. Not only here, but outside also. It's not exclusive. Only that one needs to contemplate it to recognize the correct position. Are you here, here, or there in your seeing? The ultimate seer is what? Is clothed in what form? Does it have a form? The original seeing, is it? Does it have a form, you see? All forms you can see. But you who see, what is your form? So these questions will not be satisfied merely by intellect or some mechanical thinking. There must already be something present in you, some capacity now to contemplate this, to feel it, not just think, but to think and feel and see what is the result of your own introspection, what is left. You have analyzed, you have looked, at the end of it, what remains? Everything you can see, it appears and disappears. You are the witness of what appears and disappears. You feel a headache coming. You know you're not the headache. You feel thoughts and feelings coming. Why do you feel that they're more you? They're just thoughts and feelings happening in this body also. But because of your own conditioning and identification, because of your education, rumor, propaganda, habits, has constructed a sense of an independent self that the world is acting upon, which I call the idea you have of yourself or your self-image. This is the real idolatry. Idolatry means self-worship. The idea you have of yourself that constantly the mind can refer to, the picture you're holding of yourself. That's where the response, the reactions, the interactions seem to be coming from many times now. Yet behind this is a deeper and more spacious seeing. How long will it take you to get there? What is the distance to cover? Just the distance of a thought. And that thought is, yes, I'm separate from that. How can I get there? Is enough to establish a sense of separation in you. And I wonder, how deeply drawn are you to coming to the end of this mystery? We are here for a few brief years on this earth, This is your address while you're here. What will be your highest achievement or attainment, you see, in this? What will you use this for? This is your vehicle. While you are embedded in the idea that you are a human being only, what is the possibility of your highest attainment in this?
Okay, that was about conditioning, and Whatever idea you have of yourself, whatever it might be, is not true. It's not the, your real self. Your real self is not a concept. It's not an idea. It's not a belief. It's something much different. If anything, it's an experience and not a concept. And then, Master Muji says, how much are you drawing to solving this mystery? A lot of people are so distracted with the world and with life that they don't have that time to delve into their nature, to find out who are they, who am I, what am I. They don't give it the time and the attention that's sometimes required for that. And that's okay. They'll come around to that at some point in the evolution of their beingness. And also suffering. I met a friend of mine. Actually, I was talking to him on the phone. I hadn't talked to him for a while. And he had a photograph on the phone, and the photograph was totally different than anything I'd ever seen before, because I could see that his real self was breaking through his mind vibration. Before that, I could not really ever see that real creative, pure self, the real self. It was mostly the vibrations of the mind had covered up that part of who he really is. I suppose you could call that the soul, but in either case, it's an evolution to be able to break through from the persuasive influence of the mind and experience the freedom that comes with the inner consciousness of soul. Okay, so now we're going to, I suppose we could go back to some more music, maybe. Let's see what we have here. Okay, well, we have one with... sung by Andre Bocelli, and it's called Canto della Terra.
It works differently to lower blood sugar. Imagine.
Ascolto il mare, se... a tutte le sue onde come una barca che guarda questa terra che gira insieme a noi anche quando è buio. Guarda questa
Andre Bocelli, Canto della Terra, very beautiful song, very beautiful singer. And now we're going to, getting towards the end of the show, so we're going to have a guided meditation from Master Muji. So if you can, if you're at home or if you're in a comfortable position in your car or somewhere, maybe you could sit quietly and close your eyes. Well, obviously not if you're driving your car, but if your car is stationary, just sit in your car, sit at home comfortably and follow along as he directs you. This will last about 15 minutes or so. So make yourself comfortable, close your eyes, go inside, and follow the directions.
In this moment, I want you to just be aware. First, we can begin with just your bodily sensation, the awareness of the presence of this body. And the naturalness and simplicity of this awareness. It is just here. Neither doing nor undoing. The body can only be perceived because, first of all, awareness is here. And this awareness itself is what we are, actually. What we appear to be is the functioning of the body and mind and the sense of personality. This is also watched in the awareness. Whatever appears in the mind or body or appears apparently external also to the body, all this is being perceived effortlessly in the awareness that is unmoving. You are naturally aware of this. But in this moment, it should be very clear for you. There isn't a functioning for awareness, but functioning of body and mind, and all movements are taking place and are perceived in the awareness itself. You are here. You are not behind awareness or in front. You are the awareness itself. As pure awareness, you have no self-image. An image is only another phenomenon appearing in awareness and watched by your own self as awareness. Create no relationship to anything that appears or arises in you. Remain self-aware. The sense of coming and going is also a movement appearing in you, because your body, mind, thought, feelings, all these, they arise as movements in that unmoving awareness. Whatever appear, let it appear by itself. There is no need to follow or to analyze or interpret now. Let them come and go. Like this, nothing will trouble you. You are not that which comes and goes. No appearances can be you. They come and go. Appears, disappears. You are the witness of both the appearance and disappearance. But now, you are not concerned about these things. There is a presence, a silence, a stillness, which is here by itself. There is no doer of it. No creator of this stillness. It is simply here, in you, with you. It is the fragrance of your own self. There is nothing to do about this. It is naturally present, this fragrance of peace, spaciousness. It is the fragrance of your own being. You have no form of your own. You are the formless void, and beyond void, because if there is a void, yourself perceives it. Your own self, the pure awareness, is not perceived by another. It is self-aware. You are the weakness of all names and forms. They appear in front of you, they report to your presence. You are the weakness of time. Time does not weakness you. Your senses, mind, emotion, all this arises in you naturally. You are naturally aware of them. But none of them stay. All comes and goes. Even the attention is watched by you. When I say it is watched by you, it is not in some personal way. The person itself is only idea. Watching of the idea of person also appears in you. You are the unborn. There is no date of birth for you. There is no date of end for you. You are like unbound space. There is neither death nor life for you. You are immaculate awareness. There is neither high nor low for you, neither inside or outside. All these appear through the mind. Mind itself is only ideas appearing in your own self. Let all things arise, let them appear. Remain in your natural detachment. This is effortless for you. Remain without identity. Identity adds nothing to you of value, but limits your openness. You are the pure being. There is a silence now. This silence is also present with you, indivisible. It's a subtle current of pure joy. But there's no one behind it, no one to keep it or to lose it. Be aware of this. Knowing this, you will not be troubled. Remain in your own natural spaciousness. When I say remain, it means simply remain in your natural self-awareness. There is no one to do this. You are already this. Do not create any relationship with any object, any appearance. Also, do not create any relationship with the idea of even subject. Let object and subject appear. Keep no labels for yourself. Remain as you are. You are the unborn, the undying, the timeless. you were never born. What is born is this form and the name that came into being. And this coming into being appears in your own timeless, infinite self. You are pure awareness, beyond names and forms, beyond what comes and goes. All these appearances, they are watched effortlessly in yourself. If you remain without identifying with what appears, then your own timelessness will become self-evident for you. You are the witness of all appearances, all phenomena. You are the eyes that sees all. But this all-seeing eyes, they cannot be seen, because it is itself formless. Ideas such as becoming yourself or knowing how to be, leave these ideas, and these ideas will leave you. They do not serve what you are. Do not tie yourself to any intention, nor to time. Don't anticipate to become something in the future. And your timeless, ever-present being will reveal itself more clearly. Remain like this. Om.
That was Master Muji with one of his guided meditations. I always like his guided meditations. They're so relaxing and so insightful. That brings us to the end of another show. Our next show will be tomorrow evening, that's Tuesday, from 8 to 9. It'll be a shorter show for 1 hour. I do this show on my own here at the studio. And there's, if you've ever been to the inside of a studio, there's like hundreds of little levers and buttons and all kinds of stuff. And sometimes we have a little technical difficulty. For one thing, I just noticed one of the leads, wire, fell down and hit a lever and pushed the lever down. And that decreased the volume going out to the people all over the internet, all over Santa Cruz. So, we do run into little technical problems, like when I opened my iPod, one of my iPods, it had run down, the battery had run down, so I wasn't able to use it for several minutes at least. So we're up against these technical problems. I mean, I suppose if it wasn't, a free radio, a pirate station radio where we don't have any influence commercially, so we're more free to give you the programs that you need or might want. So we have to do all this work all on our own. If we had somebody helping us like the commercial stations, it would go out a lot smoother, probably. But we do our best. And, if you want to support this station financially, it would be a good thing. And you can send any kind of contributions you want to FRSC, Post Office Box Let me get my glasses here till I see what I'm reading. That's Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061, I think. It looks like 61. And you can send any kind of contributions. Obviously, even if you could send $5 a month to some kind of a, we do have a banking account somewhere, and that would be great. The support, the cost of running this station. We are actually in the red right now, so any kind of help would be good. We ourselves, as DJs, we support the station. We pay so much money of our own, to just to bring you these stations. So, anyway, it's great being with you, and it's great sharing this information. And I hope it's will gradually open your consciousness more and more to your full potential. Okay, good night for the moment. We'll see you tomorrow at between 8 and 9. And then every Monday and Tuesday, every Monday between 6 and 8, every Tuesday between 8 and 9. Thank you.